Jessica. Well, after a little pause in activity in Tehran this weekend, some protesters were back out again today in one of the squares. The Basij riot police would have nothing to do with that. They pretty much attacked hundreds of demonstrators who were there with tear gas. They fired live ammunition in the air to disperse the rally in central Tehran today. This after the country pretty much went down on lockdown yesterday. Anytime anybody tried to go anywhere, the police were there to block them. And then again today, they tried to go out, and even at subway stations, the police were telling people, don't stand still, keep moving, don't walk together. Hey, you two, they were breaking up groups of people. And there's still a lot of tension going on there. Mousavi, who is the candidate who lost the election, is saying in some of his postings on his website that he wants supporters to turn on their car lights late this afternoon as a sign of protest. He says, the country belongs to you. Protesting lies and fraud is your right. And meanwhile, here in the U.S., we've got Republican politicians going on TV, like Lindsey Graham yesterday with George Stephanopoulos, saying that President Obama is being timid and passive in his response to the Iranian government's deadly crackdown on the election protesters there. Here to share her thoughts on all of this is Robin Wright, who covered that region for several decades as a correspondent for The Washington Post. She's written 5 books about it, most recently Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. Robin, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Nice to be with you.
What do you think of the comments by Republicans about President Obama's being too timid and passive?
Well, there's obviously a great temptation to try to get the United States leadership to take a firm stand on Iran, or a bolder stand. But the reality is the United States has a very murky history in Iran. In 1953, the United States and Britain orchestrated a counter-coup against a democratically elected government that had forced the Shah into exile. And the United States helped bring him back after only 6 days. And that's deeply remembered, and there continue to be deep suspicions among Iranians about what U.S. intentions are. This is a truly domestic crisis, and this is one that would be better off played out by Iranians themselves, because otherwise the danger is the focus comes from tensions between the different factions in Iran and suddenly becomes Iran versus the United States. So for now, it's a wise position to take a cautious stand while also pointing out to the Iranian leadership that the United States is watching, the world is watching, and that the regime will be held accountable for deaths and injuries.
Now, I know you've been there many, many times over the years, Robin. How shocking is it to you to hear Iranians going out into the streets and denouncing the supreme leader, Khamenei?
We've clearly crossed a threshold politically in Iran, with the focus shifting from who won a disputed election to the very system itself. And Ayatollah Khamenei is the symbol of that system. He is effectively a political pope, an infallible political pope, who has the last word on everything, from the judicial decisions and decrees by the president to legislation and even who commands the military. And so, in many ways, the focus is today in this protest against the kind of authoritarian rule. Now, we should not mistake this and think it's a counter-revolution. It's not. But it is an attempt to press the regime for greater openings, for transparency, for accountability, for the supremacy of popular will.
How much of this, Robin, is because of the demographics of Iran?
It's a very good question, and that's clearly one of the engines of change. In the aftermath of the revolution in 1979, the clerics asked Iranian women to breed an Islamic generation, and boy, did they. The population doubled within a decade from 34 to 62 million, and that created a baby boom in Iran that now plays out, that you have 70% of the population under 30. That's about, in the United States, it's about 40% under 30. And that has a huge influence on politics, on the economy, on social trends. And this, of course, is the generation very savvy about computers, Twitter, the internet, and knows how to communicate with the outside world, as well as using that technology to mobilize opinion inside Iran.
We know that they are a technologically advanced generation, but are they the kind of generation that would eventually move Iran away from being a theocracy?
Well, I think throughout the Islamic world, one sees that many people, even those who are demanding democratic change, are not opposed to the idea of Islam playing a role in terms of guiding them in principles, in the same way Christianity has in the West, or Judaism. We are, after all, are a Judeo-Christian society predominantly, and that's the kind of influence that many in the Islamic world would like to see for their own faith, defining values, ideas of justice and human dignity and equality. But I don't think that we see an imminent end to the Islamic Republic, even if Mousavi should win. Remember, he is one of the pillars of the revolution, and that's what makes this protest so stunning, that all four candidates in this election are pillars of the revolution.
Right. Mousavi is not really the reform candidate as we define it here in the United States, is he?
No. He is a product of a movement, in the same way the reform president elected in 1997 was not the leader of the movement. He kind of inherited a movement, people looking for openings, and they turned to the candidate who seems most willing to reflect their interests or act on their interests, even within the confines of an election where only certain types of candidates are allowed to run.
Robin, we just celebrated the, we just had the 20th anniversary of Tiananmen Square, which was, again, a popular uprising against an oppressive regime. But after that, and for the last two decades, we've heard very little about a resumption of that. Tell me about Iran, where we again have an oppressive regime putting down people who are speaking the voices of freedom. If they do get silenced here, is it likely to simmer and boil over eventually?
There have been four major events in the last century in Iran that have been on a trajectory about empowerment issues, people wanting to have a greater say in their political life and their economic life, and this is the fourth of those. And each one has changed Iran to some important degree. This one will, too, even if the regime managed to repress the protests in a short term. I think that we've seen something that has really redefined the political environment in Iran. And I think the fact that the regime is, has come out today and said, well, in fact, there were 3 million ballots that were stuffed. That's an extraordinary number of votes that have that they're admitting are fraudulent. And I think that they're announcing that in part because they understand the public is demanding answers, and they can't get away with simply saying, you know, Ahmadinejad won the election.
Last question for you. What does this mean for U.S.-Iran foreign policy?
Well, the reality is that whoever is the next president is likely to take the same position on the issues most controversial in the United States, particularly Iran's controversial nuclear program. And so, in the end, the position may not change a lot, but I think that the whoever is president would set a very different tone. Ahmadinejad brings a lot of ideologues to the table, hardline positions, and he brings in issues tangential, whether it's Israel's right to exist or whether the Holocaust happened. Whereas Mousavi is a technocrat and a long, you know, former prime minister who would probably bring more seasoned diplomats who know the rules of international protocol and engagement. And we'd see a difference in atmospherics, in language, in willingness to at least sit down and talk seriously. So I think that there are some interesting differences, but in the long term, it may not make a huge difference. But again, we are in uncharted waters here, and it's unclear how this is going to play out. If this goes on for a long time, it could diminish the powers of the supreme leaders. It could diminish. It could emphasize the idea of a republic rather than just an Islamic state in this country that is officially called the Islamic Republic of Iran. So a lot could change before we get to the point that we may actually be talking to an Iranian diplomat or Iranian leaders.
Robin Wright has been covering that region for a long time, and her new book is called Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.